Okay. Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Kenwood, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stucker, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mrs. Smith? Mrs. Powers?
Here.
Mrs. Solak?
Here.
Mrs. Andre?
Here. Okay, at this time we have public participation. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board? Seeing none. First up, we have presentations, reports, and initiative updates.
This evening, Bob and I are going to do just a brief update, a little tag team. We'll step up to the podium to give you an update on our five-year financial long-range plan. We're not totally rehearsed on this, but you do have a document in front of you, and it really is the recreation of last year's document. So just as we've indicated, we will simply update that each year. You're not going to see a new plan. You'll simply see the same plan sort of renewed to reflect the current conditions and the kinds of things that we're talking about. If you don't have a copy on your at your place, you should. We can give you some additional copies. Got one? Okay. So to begin with, I'm just going to walk you through the document itself, and then we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about the specific. We began with our vision and mission, as we did last year, because that's the driver for us. The learner characteristics, which are an important piece of how we make decisions about learning and where we want to put our resources. Page five gives you an introduction and talks a little bit about the challenges as well as the opportunities that we have in Glen Island 41. Not much has changed in the challenges that we faced last year at this time. However, last year when we presented to you, we were facing that 0.1 CPI. And since that time, we've had an increase in CPI. So we got a reprieve for this year at 2.7, for next year's fiscal year. Following year, we'll go back to a 1.5, which was the December CPI, and will be used for FY13. So that gives you an idea of some of the variances that we're experiencing now that we haven't in previous years. PMA is our projecting device that we use in hire PMA to do that for us. You see this every year. That slide that's projected is the same slide that you saw back during the levy process. And we'll begin, I guess, here, and I'll let Bob talk a little bit about that. But this chart, which is something you've all had lots of discussion about over the years, which is that the chart changes every year. And of course it changes every year because we do something to intervene to make sure that the trajectory does not go down. So if you look at your chart, which is located on page 10 of your document, it would indicate that in 2016, remember we took it out one more year in the five-year projection, that you'd see our fund balances being reduced significantly. As we get further into the presentation, though, you'll see that we're going to mitigate that, and that's what the five-year financial plan is all about. So I'm going to go back, and you can talk as much as you want about PMA, somewhat of a review for the board.
Sure. Mike, could you go back a couple of slides? I'd like to start with the revenue. Right. One more. Okay. So this is the presentation that you've seen. You see annually in November and December in preparation for our tax levy. This has been updated with the latest CPI that was set in December when CPI was determined a 1.5% increase. So all these scenarios are the same except that it's updated now for the CPI value that we're going to use for next year's budget. Okay? Expenditures. This is the summary of expenditures. We have salaries, total benefits, purchase services, supplies, materials, capital outlay, the other expenditure items that we have. We've gone from 2011, the current budget as is, to 2016. And you can see the growth in salaries as they are, as they've occurred, or we expect them to occur. You can see the salaries are expected to increase, given these assumptions now, at 4% or a little bit more annually through 2016. Benefits, we rolled back, since we're now with the EBC Cooperative, we rolled those benefits back to, about an 8% increase from the 12.5% that we had this year, 12.5% increase we had this year, and the 16% increase we had the previous year. So you can see that those numbers have improved somewhat over the next several years as a result of joining that cooperative. I've held expenditures, purchase services, supplies, materials, capital outlay, and so forth. I've held them for 2012. We've frozen them from this year to next year, and then in the years after, we have 3% annual increases. So we're making a commitment to do our best to live within the percentage increases that we've indicated here in this presentation. Overall, you can see the total expenditures grow somewhere between 3.5% and just under 5%. But again, that's given the assumptions, you know, the existing salary schedules that we have for GIA, as well as the negotiated agreements for ASPIA. So Mike, we'll go on to the next slide. This slide here portrays total revenues, broken down on local, state, and federal. So we have total revenues, total expenditures that we have a surplus or deficit for each given year. As you can see, because of the adjustments and the commitments that we've made in 2011, and we expect to follow through in 2012, we're in an okay spot for this coming fiscal year. However, as we go out 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, we're going to need to make additional reductions so that we don't hit this deficit situation on an ongoing basis. That's what we're committed to doing in the future. Okay, Mike. And then this is just a slide that shows the current value for expected fund balances. We peak over here in 2012, and then we begin to notice the deficits that are occurring through the years 2016. This is all funds except for debt service and developer donations, which is shown separately, are not included in this particular presentation. Are there any questions regarding the PMA presentation?
Yeah, I had a couple. Just on the salary increases of over 4%, what drove that assumption? Is that?
Well, our negotiated agreements for salaries are 3.36% the base, and the other increases would be attributable to step and lane movement that occurs in the salary scale.
So that's included in that.
Okay. That's included in this. This is a very dynamic program that allows them to work people as they increase by step or lane every year, as well as it takes into account retirements.
And I just, you made a statement, I want to make sure it's understood. When these deficits, you're saying that we're committed to not having these deficits?
We are committed at this time not to have district have deficits occur in the district.
So you're...
That's the rest of the, we're really going, that's what we're going to talk about, is how to make this...
How to make these go.
That's correct. This presentation here is just essentially sort of how business has been conducted, or how.
So we look at PMA's projections, as you know, to help guide us make long-range plans. Since their projections are based on some assumptions we give them, that if nothing changed, this is what would happen over the next 5 years. We take those assumptions, we take those projections, and then we go back to the table ourselves and say, if we want our revenue and expenditure line not to cross, we want them to meet each other, what kinds of things will we need to do? And that's what you'll see in the rest of the document that we're going to share with you this evening, which is really just an update from what we shared with you last year. Except last year, we provided you with $3.2 million in reductions that we made in order to get this process started. And as Bob said, as a result of those reductions and the result of those adjustments we made last year, we're in good shape for FY12. Mm-hmm. And so really we're talking about what it looks like for FY12 and on through FY16.
Ann or Bob, I just want to make sure on page 9 of the projection analysis that I understand this bottom number here. Fund balance as number of months of expenditures. So when we see in FY2013 3.70, that's the number of months that we would have available for expenses.
If we did nothing to...
Right, right. Because that's part of our conversation later on in our meeting.
Correct.
For me, is in terms of what we hold in terms of expenditures.
And we'll have a chance to look at that when we get to Bob's table on what our current financial reality is and how we're projecting it out.
Thank you.
A little separate from
So then, sounds like we're about to discuss the plans to take, you know, 308,000 out, 1.1, and, you know, over the course of the year.
We'll get to that later in the presentation.
Yes, yeah, and then you can produce a chart like this with those cuts out. Then.
No.
Yes,
I think that would be good to see so we can look at the new curve.
Well, if you look on page 11 and 12, and nothing has changed here over the course of the last year, where we identified for you all of our priorities and the kinds of conversations that will drive how we develop our budgets over the next 5 years. Curriculum and instruction, professional development, technology, facilities and community being the top priorities that shape our budget decisions on an annual basis. So having said that, then you know that as a result of those priorities each year, we have to look at the budget. We can make some long-range decisions about how we're going to budget each year, but we also have to look at how it lines up with our educational priorities, which are part of our long-range plan. So on page 13, we begin to take a look at the five-year plan and the financial assumptions we made, as well as the guiding principles that we're using as we look out 5 years. Having a balanced budget is a top priority for us, and not going in, to using any of our fund balances unless there's board approval for the kind of purchase that is a one-time purchase only, not a structural deficit, where what your PMA model shows you moving into if you don't make any changes in your financial plan. On page 14, you'll see Bob's projections, which adjust for the need to not have our expenditures exceed our revenues. And I think what you're asking, John, is can we take this table and turn it into a chart, basically, so that you can see how the revenues and expenditure lines match up over the course of the next 5 years. Bob, I'll let you talk a little bit about that.
So, what type of controls do we need to put in place over our expenditures so that we don't have these ongoing deficits? And what I've done, my numbers are not going to align exactly with PMA's. They're reasonably close, but there's not going to be alignment because they have a much more dynamic program than I do. I just sort of use straight percentage-based increases or decreases to the presentation. And what we need to do is just pay attention here to the revenue line and to the expenditure line. And what we have typically experienced over the past several years is we have sort of a stagnant growth in revenues, not dramatically increasing or dramatically decreasing. But what we have experienced is a dramatic increase in expenditures that have increased anywhere from 4%, 5%, 6%, or 7% annually over the past several years. So the way that we're going to be, want to eliminate the structural deficits is to get a better control over those expenditures. Now, I don't have a dynamic like a salary program for a benefit growth program. But I do know that let's just talk about benefits. I know that given the consortium that we've joined, benefit costs instead of medical costs, which are about 75% of our total benefits, instead of those going up 12, 15, 16% annually, we can expect something more around 6 to 8%, a significant reduction in what we're currently experiencing. Another calculation that I've done is typically, if you look at the PMA presentation, salaries are growing 3, 4, 5% annually. What I've done here is I have allowed salaries to grow 2% per year overall. That's not a 2% increase to the base or anything else within that salary schedule, but I've allowed gross salaries to grow about 2% annually, or about, I believe it's around $500,600 a year. Also, we have taken the choice to take very small increases to our purchase services, supplies, materials, capital outlay. Those are the three areas that we can't control. We still have very basic services, supplies, materials that we need to provide for our students and our staff. But we do have more control over them than, let's say, salaries or benefits that are negotiated. The other line here, great portion of that is tuition. The other portion is bond payments. Bond payments are set for us for the next 4 or 5 years. Bond payments, I believe the last one we're going to make is about 2018 plus. So we called the clerk in the fall when we were setting the levy. And I think that final, I think it'll be levied in 2017, paid out in 2018, which is further than what we go in this presentation here. But what we've tried to do is hold these services to sort of an allowable growth of 2 to 3% annually. When we get out here to 2016, the only way we could make this budget not have a deficit again is to freeze purchase services, supplies, and materials, and in the capital outlay. I think we're in pretty good shape there. The biggest point is that benefits will slow down the rate of growth to about 6 to 8% or less, because that's the high limit of the expectation of growth. And in salaries, as I said, we can only grow salaries at about $500,000 a year, and that's for our entire staff. And so what I've shown here is we have our beginning fund balances plus and minus our revenues and expenditures to come up with the surplus or deficit for the year. As you can see, not much, but we have eliminated that projected deficit as we move out. It gives the fund balances. And then what I broke out to sort of try to align a little closer with the PMA presentation is I stated separately the developer donations and the working cash. Now, I did want to caution you, in the current fiscal year, actually last year and this year, I took down the developer donations because we've committed to spending $425,000 out of that fund for the Hadley addition. So you'll notice that this was about $480,000. It's less than $425,000 that we have in there and that we've committed to have.
If we could note a couple things that are present both in this year's budget and then as we've taken this out, as Bob said, that there's, you know, you're limited by what you can do, and salary and benefit are our largest expenditures, and so the requirement to limit those overall expenditures to about 2% each year is the only way that we can continue to stay above that line. If you'll notice, though, in our fund balance line, and as Erica said, this is a topic that you'll be discussing a little bit later, we intentionally reduced a greater amount last year, knowing that it would leave us with a fund balance this year that brought some questions by board members. But we felt that that was a more solid approach to making our reductions last year because they would compound, the salary that we saved would compound over time, and so yield us a little bit more breathing room later on. If you notice, when you get into FY12 and beyond, FY12 we will still have an increase in our fund balance that at this point we think is a necessary $470,000, not a lot, but considering we still have uncertainty at the state level in terms of funding, we believe that that's not overly conservative, but conservative enough to give us a little bit of leeway should we lose even further on the state funding cycle. But after that, you'll see that we are very, very close to the line. And each year, of course, we'll have to analyze based on CPI. Bob has put in an assumption after next year that CPI goes back to the 2.5 average. If that does not stay with us in that range, then, of course, further adjustments would need to be made.
Yes.
Go back to the 2% rent in salaries.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that if we know the salaries are increasing at a rate in excess of the 2%, so what you're talking about is reductions in staff to maintain that.
The 2%. Ultimately, that's where you'll have to get.
Well, you have to explore all your options.
Right.
We have collective bargaining agreements that will expire and we'll be negotiating over the course of the next several years. You have reductions or reallocations of staff. I mean, those are the issues that we look at in an ongoing manner. You know, we do position analysis for every position that is vacated, whether it's during the year or at the end of the year. To determine whether or not that is a position we can continue to support.
And just so long as you, just want to give you a point of reference. In your board package, you typically receive a treasurer's report. And within that treasurer's report, you're provided a line-by-line analysis in terms of where salaries and benefits and so forth lie. And actually, year-to-date this year, we spent less on salaries this year than we did last year. So that's a result of the reductions that we've made this year as we move forward. And that's what has pushed that line out and not made it as dramatic as it would have been if we hadn't enacted those cost-saving measures.
Do the 11-12 projected column for salaries and benefits, is that we know what those are because our contract goes through 12, right? Is that what our current staff is, or is this inclusive of reductions?
For 11-12?
Yes, the delta there, I think you said it was 2%. Or I guess what I'm, is the 2% applied to the 11-12 number?
Actually, 11-12 increases by almost 4%.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the years after that will be out here.
Right.
12-13. Those
are
about 2%.
And Bob, at this point, there are no planned staff reductions except as staffing would require a demand. If you look at the last two pages of your document, it just really is a review of the goals that we set last year in order to maintain a balanced budget. And there are several action steps that we plan to take annually, most of which are not unfamiliar to you in order to keep us on track with maintaining a balanced budget. I would like to say that goal two, which is to reduce our cost benefits, reduce our benefit costs by 5% by FY15. We've almost achieved that because we've reduced by 4% going into this year, and hope by being in a larger consortium that will reap even greater benefits over time with that, simply by being as a part of a consortium.
Bob? Yeah, I have a question on page 13, the assumptions in here. I always get confused between, so if I say 2010-2011, what fiscal year is that?
FY11.
That's our
current fiscal year.
Okay. I think the 2011-2012 CPI is really shifted out a year. I think there's a 2.7 that's missing for 2010.
That's correct. You're right. It should be 2.7 for FY12, and it should be 1.5 for 13. Yeah, good correction. Thank you.
So I guess I'll just... So does that mean the next page?
No. I think we adjusted it separately.
Those numbers weren't tied to a stretch.
Okay.
No, they were.
That's why I just wanted to. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Suggestions?
Go ahead.
Just a general one. I just did a quick comparison between the PMA numbers and our numbers.
Correct.
And just trying to understand what is why.
Because we put in different assumptions that we think are necessary. PMA, we give them assumptions that if nothing changed over the course of the next 5 years, this is what would happen. And so that really is a lightning rod for us to say, okay, well, obviously something has to change in order for us to maintain a balanced budget. So we keep our assumptions relatively constant with PMA, but we adjust them for ourselves, knowing what we need to do over the course of the next 5 years to continue to stay on top of it.
I was asked to create a plan that says, Bob, what adjustments do we need to make, given what we know from PMA, what adjustments do we need to make to maintain a balanced budget in the district? And these assumptions give us a pretty good plan of where we need to go over the next 4 or 5 years.
And we like using PMA as a static model, you know, and I probably shouldn't use that term because Bob was talking about how it's not static, it's dynamic, but we give the assumptions that remain static in it unless we change them.
Right.
And it does give us a sense of if you keep doing things the way you're doing them, here's what you're going to have in the future.
Mm-hmm. It's a great tool for me to be able to utilize when I'm trying to plan out what we need to go over the next several years. I wouldn't want to not have that tool available.
What did you say was the benefits increase in the 13.6%, 8%?
Between 6-7%. And remember, that number, we have 75% of this for medical. The other benefits amount are just increased by the natural increases to salaries. Because it's retirement and so forth.
And we don't, when teachers retire, they're not on our medical program anymore, are they?
No, they go to the teacher retirement.
And we don't. Do we fund that premium at all or anything? Because some districts do.
Do we fund that premium? We do. It's a flat amount each year.
Oh, it's $300. That's right.
Until Medicaid?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a flat amount.
Right.
So it may not cover, it wouldn't cover all expenses up to that point necessarily.
Well, it's an annual amount that we give the retirees for every year until they reach a certain age. I believe it's either 10 years or 65 years, whichever is what
But they're not on our medical program. They're not someone we don't have to account for.
It's a premium that we pay directly to the teacher's retirement health insurance system.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't, we pay that portion of their premium on their behalf directly to that agency.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that, what we pay them, doesn't cover their total premium with that plan, then they have to pay out of their retirement.
Okay.
I guess a comment and then a question. When I look at supplies and materials and then capital outlay, especially in 2014-15 and 15-16, we have it frozen.
In the final year.
In the final year, right. So is... Have you built into this emergency costs, any capital outlay around roofing issues or things like that? And I ask that because I know that we've talked about your age and obsolescence program and your capital program in order to stay ahead of that. So my question is, do you feel like this is a good, is representative of having done that work and having our buildings, our assets up to speed even at this point in order to maintain them at the level they need to be?
I would hope that to be the case. Now, it can change in 5 years. Mm-hmm. I can't say that for sure, but that would be the plan, that we would be able to stay within this financial presentation.
Okay.
Which freezing in the final year does not take it away.
Right.
It doesn't
right. We just
take
that
out in
either
way.
Right.
It just means you have the same funding
right.
Level for it. And we know that, as you've seen in the long-range capital plan, roofs are of concern to
mm-hmm.
us
mm-hmm.
as we go out. And so it may be that as we adjust some of our capital expenditures over the course of the next 5 years to make sure that we have the revenues for that.
And there may be a year where we may not spend this much money, but yet we sort of identify and set it aside for
right, which you have done in the past. Yeah.
Do we, I was just kind of looking at these salary benefit numbers here, trying to figure out the delta between PMA's projection and your projection with the 2% seems to be somewhere around $500,000 a year. So obviously the only two things we can do for these numbers are difference increases or headcount. So if I'm looking at this right, we'd have to lose, if let's say the contract was just where it's at now and extended out for 5 years, we'd be looking at making $500,000 in headcount reductions in those years, and that's about how many teachers, because you're riffing on the low end of the pay scale.
Well, and you
so are you talking like 10 teachers a year?
Well, and you remember that you'd compound that, so it wouldn't, it probably wouldn't maintain at 10 over the course of those 4 years or 3 years. It would probably, whatever you can yield out of that savings, you get the benefit of the following year. So.
But it doesn't take into account retirements.
Well,
I mean, we have those.
Right. You're not
right.
The PMA would.
PMA would.
Right.
Not.
Right.
But retirement or not, you're either replacing the headcount or you're not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not replacing it, then you're
right. But as you said, when you talked about
salary.
Right. But you talked about position analysis, and then the other bullet here on page 15 is employ part-time employees on a must-have basis. So it's assessing the non-negotiable roles we need to have and making sure we have those, whether they're half FTE or full. I think this, if I can just freeze this conversation for a minute, because I think this is the complexity of this, and that we know, because Ann has said this before, that starting in January, her staff is living in two school years, completing this one, and then looking into next year's staffing and the budget beyond that, that year beyond. So I think when we use numbers like, is that 10 teachers that we take out of the mix, is too static, because it's more there's much more that goes into it.
But it could put, I mean, but if you kept your same assumptions, and I think that's what Bob's question was, if you kept all things the same,
equal,
would it be about,
does it max out about
10 teachers? Correct.
Yeah, I mean, it's where I was going with the headcount is, doesn't matter if it's teacher, administration, whatever, but there's, in this budget, you would assume there's a minimum of a 10
employees
headcount reduction, at least over the 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
On the revenue side, I assume your projections were based on whatever the CPI was plus new construction.
Yeah. Increasing or decreasing EAB, the CPI, and new construction.
Yeah.
We've built those numbers into our projections for revenue.
Although you see that we kept EAB at zero for a couple years because that's where we currently are. And then hoping that they'll be recovering and raise that up a little bit. So all of those variables change each year, which is why having this represented each year with new information and what changes have occurred in the economy.
Is there any comment lately from the state about payments? I'm asking silly questions.
The comments are that general state aid is expected to be maintained,
mm-hmm.
and payments made in a timely fashion. However, we are hearing mandated categoricals, which amounts to about $2 million built into this budget.
Mm-hmm.
We could anticipate receiving one payment this year, that's $500,000, maybe two. But I'm hearing more often than not, hearing that you can expect one payment this year. And then they're talking about extending the deadline so as the state doesn't maybe not consider itself late making payment to such like a school district, that instead of December, when we're allowed to recognize revenues from July 1st to December, they may actually extend in a full year till June 30th of next year,
yeah.
until they're finally considered delinquent or non-payment, or that we won't be allowed to recognize those revenues on an accrual basis when the auditors come in and present the financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some difficult conversations going out there right now. And nothing has been promised.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, I can't remember. I'm looking at the AFSCME contract. When did that one up end? Okay.
But in terms of dollars, 1% AFSCME is...
Yeah.
Right. No.
Is that, what,
right.
20,
it's not
10% or less of
it's
1%?
Not,
it's not a lot.
I mean,
right.
It's
I know
the
it's not. I
just which is why we kept those percentages
the
where we did.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is our tuition that we pay out Has that increased? I can't remember if we saw those numbers. I mean, they have gone increased, right?
And we're expecting it to continue to increase.
Some more extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, it's our new agenda. Next up are our action items. So we have the consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Okay, hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes the Human Resources Personnel Report with employment recommendations and resignations. We also have the regular board meeting minutes from January 18th, 2011, the semi-annual review of closed meeting minutes, the destruction of closed meeting audio records, and also the case board meeting action items. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Ms. Malkin?
Yes.
Ms. Powell?
Yes.
Ms. Stola?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, next up we have the superintendent's recommendations. So we have the class size targets. So at the January 18, 2011 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation for no change in current class size targets or to the process and to maintain the following class size targets for the 2011-12 school year, which would be for K through 2, 20 to 22 students, grade 3, 23 to 25, grades 4 and 5, 25 to 27, and then grades 6 through 8, 26 to 28 students. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
My only question, I'm trying to remember, when was the last time these were changed? I mean, these have been about the targets for how long?
I'm going to guess since about maybe 2003 or 2004. Is that...
Okay.
What was your question since we changed?
Yeah. I mean, how long have these or been the targets? I mean, just from the historical...
I don't think we've changed them since then.
We haven't changed them.
So I asked that question at the last meeting, and we said that they have not been changed. I thought they were changed back, maybe not when you were here, but I thought we had raised them.
I thought, and that's what I was saying, and just again, historical perspective, I was thinking.
I think 2003 was, okay, I can only speak to actually because when I came here, and I think that's when they were like formalized in.
Yeah, I was saying actually declare them and vote.
And then probably about 2005, I think we tweaked one of the ranges, one of the intermediate levels, but basically since then they've been basically the same ranges.
And I'm wondering, John, if that's the one you're thinking of in 2005.
I thought we had done it 1 year, but right. Again, we haven't done it in a long time, but I probably haven't done it 1 year.
Okay.
Because I remember getting emails from people asking why we would do that, that we should stick to our targets and not just move them because of the...
Well, I think we've been getting emails over the last few years just when, as classes start to fill up and they see the numbers or they start school and see the numbers, then there's a question, this is out of target by one student, this is...
When do you add a class?
When do you add a class, et cetera. So I think we're always going to get that.
Yeah, that's not the emails I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Since 2006,
Okay.
We've not changed the target. That means for sure.
Okay.
And it's part of our scorecard, too, to analyze how well we meet them.
Mm-hmm.
So we do look at them every year and see how we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any more discussion?
No.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Solak?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Malkin?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, second, we have a request for a proposal for auditor services. So again, at the January 18, 2011 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to approve the contract extension with Baker Tilly for auditing services for fiscal years 2011, 12, and 13 in the amount of $32,000, $32,900, and $33,800 respectively, for a 3-year total of $98,700. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Just want to reiterate the question was posed to Drew, who was part of the team that looked at this, and he gave us a very cogent response in terms of how they looked at it. So I want to thank you for your work on it.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Mr.
Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Miller? Yes. Yes. And our final recommendation is the board policy and procedures. We have a second reading and adoption. So, at the January 18, 2011 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to approve and adopt the policy and procedure revisions to Section 2, school board policies and or procedures, as well as the district's investment policy number 4.30 as recommended by the Finance and Facilities Committee. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Yeah, I do. This is the one where I think we've got the we've added a policy that didn't exist before around the need to fill out a template or write your desire to run for a position on the board.
It's section 2.210, right?
An additional. It's an edit, not a new policy, but yeah,
in addition to the organization of school board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but it is an addition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not something brand new that we haven't had before.
Correct. To an existing policy.
Right. And this is
well, to an existing area.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I guess I personally have a problem with it. I think that the need to fill something out and declare 2 weeks ahead of time, to me, is just something I don't think we need to do. Some people do well in writing that, some people don't. I think if you want to run for a position on the board, that you can have conversations with people and talk to them about why you want to be on the board, but I don't see the need to have this as a requirement. If we want to say that you may do that, I'd be okay with that, but I'd argue conceptually that there's no sense in having a policy because it's not required. And I don't know that we've talked about it as a board. I don't know how, you know, it sounds like this isn't something we've had a real discussion on, in my opinion, at least not since I've been here.
You said the board, but you mean the board officer positions, right?
Right.
Yeah. Can I give a little bit of history, because this was my suggestion, recommendation. When we reorganized last time, so you weren't on the board, we had a conversation, several of us, and I brought to the table at a board meeting a request that if, you know, those of us who were interested in running for a leadership position, to provide some background on what our interest is, why we're interested, what our goals might be, to try and give it some, especially for brand new board members, some sense of relevance to what the position does, et cetera. And it was in part because, and this wasn't the last time, but the time prior to it, when I was a brand new board member, being engaged in conversations outside of regular board meetings, one-on-one, phone calls and email, et cetera, positioning folks for leadership positions. I didn't feel as a brand new board member that I had a good sense of that, and so I asked a lot of questions. And so what it made me think about 2 years later was, how could we codify that in some way and make it more transparent and let people talk about why we're interested in a particular board leadership position, et cetera. So it's my preference. So, you know, like yours, your preference would not be not to do that. In terms of, you're right, I mean, some people more comfortable versus not. But for me, it was just the genesis of being brand new, not really knowing people very well. I mean, knowing them from sitting in the public meeting as a public participant and listening to the board speak, but not really knowing that internal interest, et cetera. And so I guess the intention behind this is, and I will grant you that when you write policy, it always sounds very static and you know, kind of stayed, I suppose. The intention is that this isn't to make people feel put in a box around it, but to cause us to have some thought and conversation around the makeup of those leadership positions and what we're wanting to accomplish or trying to accomplish. In particular for brand new board members, because they come on with much less information. But then also for us who are sitting here and thinking, you know, causing me to think, you to think, somebody to think, why do I want to do this? And just putting it in writing in some format. So that was the history behind it.
No, and I understand that, because I actually remember the first conversation, and mm-hmm. for someone who was new and didn't understand the process, you did get a position without having to write something. So the process did seem to work.
Well, no, I would. That's not what I mean. What I'm suggesting is that as a new board member, you don't have necessarily the sense of the goals of these individuals that you're now a part of in terms of what they want to do with that leadership position, if we're thinking about it from that perspective. I mean, I was invited to and agreed to be board secretary in part, John, because I have a flexible work schedule, so I'm around to sign things, if I can be honest.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that was fine. I was happy to do that because that's important. Because sometimes, you know, Maureen will call me and say, we missed this or that, or you need to get in here and do that. And so that flexibility was important for the position. It was fine. What I'm suggesting is that these board positions, these board leadership positions, have a certain, I think, set of expectations that go with them. And we've been lucky in our board leadership, I think, very lucky, because we've had really good leaders. So for me, it's just an issue of wanting to, again, provide some more transparency, make it a little easier transition for brand new board members who get a call and say, gee, I want to run for this. What do you think? I don't know. Sure. Or I don't know. I don't have enough information. So the intention is to try and kind of frame it.
I mean, I'm not really, I don't know, I don't feel strongly either way. I can definitely see the advantage of at least knowing, especially as a new board member, who's even interested. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you get a call from someone and, you know, you don't want to be like, no, you know. And then what if someone else calls you a day later? It's like you feel committed to the first person you talk to on the subject. Mm-hmm. Then again, I guess in theory, the way I read the policy, it's not a self-nominating. I mean, in the meeting itself, it's not a self-nominating procedure. Right, you have to be nominated by somebody else mm-hmm. to run, if I remember the reading of the policy, right? Mm-hmm. So in effect, we're kind of nominating ourselves by writing this declaration. And then, you know, I look at it also, the positions of secretary and even vice president, not really leadership roles, they're kind of duties, you know, and I'm just here if Steve gets hit by a bus. Yeah. I don't really have any specific duty.
Right.
But really, I mean, it's not a leadership position where as vice president, I will.
Could happen with some of those snowplows at the intersections. You never know.
But there's not really a position of
they're operational.
I don't have an agenda. Mm-hmm. You know, the secretary doesn't have an agenda or something they want to accomplish. Vice president doesn't really either. And even then, you have to ask, should a president have an agenda for
it? Yeah, I didn't really look at it that way. Yeah.
And I don't mean it, you know, an agenda is such a loaded term, but I mean, have goals. And I guess the president, you know, if you want to run to provide leadership in X, Y, and Z, you can do that. But then, you know, it is a board decision to say, where are we going to go next? You know, I'd hate to be signed on with the leadership of whoever gets elected president. Mm-hmm. And then, well, I said right here in this paper I was going to do X, Y, Z, but, you know, the way they're going about it isn't quite, you know, you don't want to feel like you signed on to this agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's a downside to
it. You may agree with three of the 4 points, but maybe not another one, and then you're... I mean, it just seems I don't mind with people declaring, "Hey, I'm interested in being the president or the vice president or both if I don't get one, or, you know, maybe something like that. But to put this process in place, I have some of the same concerns with Bob, and I feel this is our operational roles. They're very dutiful roles in terms of what. I mean, what do you do? You say, I want to run for secretary because I have a flexible schedule, or?
No, I guess what I would suggest is that what I have written in here is that this is a statement of interest. So it would be, I mean, my thinking about this is that it would be, I want to put myself in this position for these particular reasons. Sometimes I see the role of secretary, and I know you've heard me say this, is in my role as secretary, I want to remind us of what we have in terms of our responsibilities for PTA this time, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't always happen in a secretarial position, but I think there could be things that each of us do in board leadership positions that could have greater impact and perform duty, but then also have an interest in engaging that position in some other ways.
Just to restate, I know we talked about this a little bit. Of course, we talked
about policy.
Erica thought it was important, and I said I would bring it to the board. Just some of the concerns that I think I raised at policy, as I was a little worried about, you know, what can you really hold the person to if they do or don't do it? You know, I think it's a good best practices, but I'm concerned with, you know, a board policy that applies to candidates who really aren't board members yet. Does this mean, you know, all these scenarios run through my head, does this mean now you can't on the night get nominated?
As a new board member.
As a new board member.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So those are just some of my concerns with.
Didn't we insert board elected?
Mm-hmm. We did.
Yeah. Really? I mean, they're not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're assigning a policy to someone. I just have concerns with the requirement side and then, mm-hmm. you know, what is the punishment side if you don't do it? Does it mean you can't be nominated? You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would see it more along the lines of best practices or recommended practices than a requirement.
Yeah, that's what I would look. And even in just declaring intent, I don't have it in front of me. I forgot. And I missed the discussion last meeting. But as long as someone just declares their intent, I think that's fine. For the board, you don't really have to ever write anything up besides your intent of filling out some government forms, and you're on the ballot. You don't need to answer any questions or anything.
Right.
But we could change that. I mean, we could change the whole process of, like the village does. If you're going to run for president, you run for the president. You either get elected or you don't. There's no other slot.
I don't know if there's state.
I don't know what the rule that is.
I don't think you can, but I'm saying that would be the transparency and why you're running. This to me.
Well, I think, and if I can just throw in my two cents, just listening to this discussion, I took a very simplistic view of what the intention of this was. After sitting through three different terms of, you know, board leadership changing hands, I think, again, in a very simplistic view, is to just have it out there, hi, you know what, I think I'd like to become a board leader. I don't really, you know, when I look at it as statement of interest and we're using formal words for something mm-hmm. that's really more about seven individuals, whether, you know, board member elect, presently seated board member, just saying openly, you know what, I'd like a board leadership position versus the feeling of one-on-one mm-hmm. emails or phone conversations or coffee that while that's sort of the way you have to do it with those members who are already elected to avoid Open Meetings Act violations. So I understand that piece of it. But it feels very clandestine. It feels very back room, you know.
What does Tara?
Just the process that we have now, you right. know, where it's, you know, really that person wants to be the leader, you know. And while I agree that the secretary and the vice president are more figureheads, more perfunctory type roles per se, I think they're still leaders. And whether, you know, again, it's just the sense of signing a paper, there is a lot, there's a little more responsibility to it. And I know we're kidding around, but I think this is, I read this more as a simplistic way of putting out laying cards on the table to say, I'm throwing my hat in the ring. And we're saying it publicly, and we're saying it to the seven or the four, the six, eight, whatever it is, the individuals who are involved, so that it feels, doesn't feel
like high school.
Like high school. That's a great, I was going to say middle school to be even elementary, but high school, I'll give you that. Because that's the way it feels. It's nonsense.
Yeah, but is that reality, though? I mean, you made a declaration you weren't going to run for president way before the election, right?
And you know what, John? And several elections ago, yes. And I think you're right in that sometimes when, after all the names are drawn and things start happening and shifts occur, you start to realize, oh, wait a minute, okay, who's best to serve in this role? And I think some of those conversations still happen.
Well, they have to happen.
They have to happen. You're right. But I think but again, Erica, correct me if I'm wrong, I took the intention behind it was just openly stating, I'm throwing my hat in the ring. So that it isn't like, you know, we're sitting here nominating and the look, everybody trying to sit there with a poker face as to what's going on. Because I really actually think it's insulting to our community. I mean, the funny thing is when you ask people, they don't even know how the process is. I mean, I still get people thinking that I'm the president. I go, oh, no, that's deep shit. So the reality is that a lot of people, they assume that when they've elected you, oh, I just assumed that you were, you know, Steve was the president. And they don't even really realize how it is. You know, we talk about transparency. We talk about this all the time and communicating. And I took it simplistically. You're just throwing your hat out there to say, hey, you know, this is kind of my intention. And right. John, I respect how you feel about it. I respect it. You know, I don't see it as a platform. I don't see it as a position paper or what you want to accomplish or not accomplish. It's just I took it more as, just so you guys know, I'm interested in being the board, you know, and I'm not saying that, but I'm, you know,
right.
For example,
the intent
is...
What you're saying is completely different than the way I interpret that,
okay.
Right? Because if you're interested in being board president, as you were, you told everyone I'm interested, and then you have the conversation. So if it's just declaring, hey, I'm interested in a leadership position, I think that's fine. I just see the way I'm reading the statement of interest, right, and knowing Erica, that would be a very thorough document with many sections to it.
But that's fine. I mean, but I'm willing to, try this out and take a look. I mean, like you said, these are all things we can see how it works out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people can interpret it. I don't think there really is any retribution to it.
Right. And I think sometimes, too,
it's
with a
really
policy about
idea.
It...
Well, it sounds like if you don't do it, you can't have a leadership position.
I think
right
here's the plus of this in terms of even putting this conversation on the table. And we were in policy. I think part of what I said was, I just think this is good for us to have this conversation. Because there will be some years when there won't be a kind of a political nature to a board leadership position, but there will be some years where there will be that for whatever reason, right? Mm-hmm. So what I think, you know, my intention was is that if all board members, including the new ones who were elected, got at the same time a statement of interest saying, I'm interested in this position for these three reasons, five reasons, et cetera, then it provides all at once a sense of being able to have the conversation all at once. Instead of a phone call here, a phone call there, et cetera, which, again, because of the Open Meetings Act, we have to abide by.
But I feel those conversations are important.
Well, no, I'm not saying
they're
not
important. I don't think it's still going to happen.
It precludes any of those conversations. It just gets the ball rolling, that's all.
Yeah.
So can you only
are you interested? Well, no.
You could say, I'd like this, if I don't get it. I think it leaves it open.
Yeah, I'd like a leadership position if I don't get the first one.
I want an officer. I want to be an officer.
Yeah, for what?
I guess we could look at, you know, to interpretation, you know. And unfortunately, there's no line item veto on these. They're approving all of them.
That's why I'm trying to get clarification.
So we got to, you know, unfortunately, I think we can go back and look at it. For now, I'm up for just going with what the wording is. It may be open to interpretation, but let's just try it out.
So what happens if you don't fill it out, but you the night of get nominated?
Well, that Dan is actually part of the reason I thought this might be important, because I would hope that if we were interested in taking a leadership position, that we would be thinking about it.
Or if others were interested in having
you. Right, that they would come to you and say,
will you fill out a...
Jot down what you're interested in, and if it's two or three positions, I want to know that so I can put that in my thinking in terms of reorganization.
I mean, seriously, sitting at a table, can you imagine somebody saying, with you not having any idea whatsoever, hey, I think, you know, I'm going to nominate Dan for president?
I was saying, you know, something could happen.
Well, it was 2 weeks.
Someone gets a new job. Or
well, and
it's restrictive, and now they can't be secretary.
And I agree. And I think that
that's the downside of feeling, again, that whole sense of power.
I think the more to do it, I think if there's total blindside, it's going to be an interesting 2 years. I think if that's really the way things go down.
Well, it sounds like the intent is openness and transparency.
Right.
That if there are people who have interest in others serving as leadership roles, or if people have interest themselves in serving in leadership roles, that is an open conversation and not one that occurs, as you've suggested, by one-on-one phone calls, one-on-one emails, and so that old conversation is happening behind the scenes and not to the knowledge of me or the community or each other, perhaps. Is that the intent?
That's
here?
The intent.
That implies that's the way it happens.
Well, it has.
So you have no idea that who wanted to be president the last time?
Oh, I did.
Okay. I did. So that didn't happen.
But more people can decide the position.
But I'm not in that conversation, and shouldn't be. I mean, it's not for me to be in that conversation about who's going to be board president.
Right.
But I think what I'm hearing is it's not something that's said at the board table at some point prior to...
Yeah, I have no problem with the transparency of declaring that you want a leadership role. Mm-hmm. My problem is, what does a statement of interest mean? What if you're newly elected? What if something happens in that 2 weeks with somebody that mm-hmm. had a statement of interest and you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, that's not any good. Now you want to nominate someone else. Mm-hmm.
I do think, John, I think if you have to be honest, it would be very difficult for somebody who has never sat on this board to walk in and say, I want to be president. I mean, like Erica said, it happened here with her in terms of being secretary just because of, you know, it's a different role. But yeah. I think it would be really hard for an individual to come on board and do it. And you got to admit, it takes you some time to figure out what the heck is going on. And even then, you're still shaking your head.
So how would this help then?
I think it's the other way around.
It helps the new people know what's going on.
When I came on, it was the phone call method, right? Well, it still is. Yeah. And, you know, so I knew about two people because they called me and sat down with me. Mm-hmm. But, and then I found out like 6 months later, just from chitter chat, there was at least one other person interested in the presidency.
When we first came on?
Yeah, I had no idea.
Right.
You know, and they never called me, apparently because there were enough.
There were four.
Telephone conversations going around that they knew they couldn't win or whatever. So, you know, but it'd be nice to know, especially for a new board member, who's even interested.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the advantage.
I think that's really a cool intent.
You were describing sounds rather political,
I think there were like a number of people interested, and someone did the math and said, "Well, I
can't do it. It's not
I'm not going to bother calling the new guy." Right.
Forget about it. But I do think it feels political, and it shouldn't. I guess to me, it shouldn't be political. This is the school board. We're here to do things for kids and our community. It should not be political, yet at times it's exactly what happens. And I think it's unfortunate when it occurs. And I mean, I think, you know, Steve, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, even, you know, Steve and I having conversation, I think at the time when it's going on, you're in the heat of it and you don't get it, it's hard to listen, and so maybe just understanding and knowing where somebody's coming from might make it less political, might make it a little less interesting. I mean, to be honest with you, I've actually thought about throwing out there, guys, maybe the two-year thing that the park district does isn't a bad idea. I mean, I think
In terms of rotating,
I actually think it's a really good now being, you know, now being on.
But that's not, is that a policy or is that kind of a general?
No, and I don't know if that's their policy.
Is that tradition? Yeah.
Tradition. Or just a tradition. I think it's a great, if it is just a tradition, I think it's a nice one in terms of keeping sanity. But again, is that something we codify into policy? Mm-hmm. Is that, and as we're going into this election cycle, I think we would be remiss not to have those kinds of conversations. I think we've done a good job of trying to take ourselves out of the political arena of decision making, and I think we've done a fairly decent job of it more recently. So I think for me, this just kind of helps that process along, that we really are seven individuals, maybe with different opinions and different positions on different things, but that we really do work together.
Yeah, I just, again, have a problem with
the language.
The language of the 2 weeks prior and the written statement. I don't mind the transparency and saying, I want a leadership position and talking to you guys about it.
Can we pull one?
Yeah, and let's maybe try to make it something about. We'll work on it.
I'll work on the wording.
We've got a few board meetings before.
So the motion will be to approve the policies. You'll need to amend the motion or alter the motion.
Okay. I'd like to move that we amend the motion to remove this policy from
policy
the original motion.
2.210.
All right, moved and seconded. Any discussion or just roll call?
You're just pulling the one.
Bobby,
the
motion. Just pulling the one. Bobby,
the motion. He made the amended motion. Mm-hmm. Second. Right. Got the Robert's rules here. Now what do we do?
Now you can go.
Yes.
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 Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr.
Solak?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Superintendent's Report.
Enrollment is in your packet. Nothing really to present there or note.
So do we approve the rest of them?
You've already approved the rest of them.
Oh, I thought we were voting to agree.
Addition by subtraction.
No, is there a motion to amend and then vote on the motion? That's the question.
Yeah. I thought we were voting on the motion to amend.
No, they don't need to vote.
We all knew we were done.
Here's what I missed. You have a motion to approve all the policies, and then you amended the motion to approve them all except for the one that we voted on. Does that make sense?
Yes. That's how
and
I interpret it.
Vacates the original motion?
Yeah.
Right, nobody voted on it.
Nobody voted on that.
Second.
So you didn't have to vote it down.
All right.
Third.
Okay.
I wanted to make sure that's one.
The only other thing I'd like to just mention by way of great kudos to Bob and Buildings and Grounds for the incredible work they've done in clearing our schools, getting them safe for students to attend on Friday of last week. Just round-the-clock efforts. Bob and Ed both were vigilant and there, and the custodians that were there pretty much night and day trying to get the work done. And so we would not have been in school on Friday without that effort. And thank you, Bob, to you and your crew.
Okay, next up, we have discussion items. Oh, I'm sorry. We have board reports. You're right. Are there any members of the board who wish to give a report at this time?
I have the PTA Council meeting. I sent Maureen the highlights, and I'm hoping I'm keeping in with what we sort of discussed. But the highlights from that meeting, Karen Carlson, the literacy specialist from Churchill correspondent Ben Franklin, were there for PTA Council, kind of discussing our literacy program overall, literacy program. And then there were some discussions about our word study spelling approach that is incorporated into our literacy program. The District 41 PTA Council is hosting their overall District 36 PTA Council meeting for February 10th at 10:30 at the Public Library, and it's an opportunity for the different PTAs and PTA Councils to talk, and it's actually entitled Let's Not Reinvent the Wheel. Julie reported about the Parent Involvement Committee that they're hosting a family math night on February 22nd at Churchill, and that the family fitness night in November that was held at Ackerman was a huge success. They had over 100 people there, so thank you to Julie and her Parent Involvement Committee that did all that work. They also gave updates from each of the buildings and the different committees, but I will let individual board members who attended those meetings, if you want to share some of that information. But the next PTA council meeting is February 21st here at CHO. I believe Bob is going to be one of the presenters. I will, and I did include it in the council meeting, the minutes, but when I was giving my presentation, we did talk a little bit about board elections, and I asked them to please make sure that whatever they decided to do in terms of candidate forums, that they bring that to the individual board candidates and kind of get that stuff up. So they did talk a little bit about maybe coordinating and having one to be hosted by all the PTAs. And then I know Legal Room Voters has one, but at least it would be a little bit more inclusive. And so hopefully they'll make a decision to do that. Kim Dorian, who's the legislative chair, I think is going to try to spearhead that. And
I have a quick CERC update, Special Education Resource Committee, and I'm waiting on their minutes, Maureen, and then I'm going to forward you those so that you can have them. But just quickly, it was held at Ben Franklin. It was an information meeting. Sometimes they have kind of a casual meeting, but then these are kind of learning meetings. And there were 20-plus parents, but also I was impressed that there were some district 41 staff as well, a couple of our social workers and our speech therapists. They invited from a company called On the Ladder an occupational therapist and speech therapist who presented on child development stages, and in particular the kind of work that our schools do around helping children regulate themselves so that they can be in the kind of the best learner state. It was fascinating, and they had a lot of video examples of how they work with children and how that it can impact a classroom and in working with children and some of the manipulatives and some of the things that we have in our classrooms, the balls to sit on or the comfort seats that children sit on, et cetera. So it was a very good meeting and I think very well attended. Their attendance has been up, the chair just said. So when I get those minutes, I'll send them to Maureen. But just a real eye-opener in terms of the kind of certainly opportunities and also challenges in the classroom with different learning needs.
I think I was at the CIT meeting since the last board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. So, yeah, I mean, it was interesting. All the separate building leadership teams, I guess, gave reports, so that took up most of the meeting, and a lot of good information there. And then work's continuing on the long-range plan. So basically the update.
On finance today, well, we had a couple of things just to draw your... Does everyone get the packets, or is it only on board docs?
It's on board docs.
It's on board docs.
Is the Hadley courtyard on board docs, too? That's bad?
Not yet.
Yeah. If you can't take a look at that, because we'll be talking about that in upcoming meetings, it's just something out of the ordinary there. So... some courtyard renovation recommendations for the heavy courtyard, kind of turning it into more of a learning space than a weed patch. And then we also had FGM in today to give us the Spalding site study kind of test fits on that property. And we've retained that option. So as of right now, what you'll see next... board meeting, the recommendations will be new K5, either it's Spalding or a large parcel, and also the other option, if you will, the middle school option with the rehabilitated Hadley into a K5. So those are the kind of two options, but that one K5 has sort of two possible directions, and that's one at Spalding or one at a large parcel. So that's where we're at. The question I guess I've got for the board is, we're presenting in 2 weeks, and the question for the board is, what do you guys want that to look like? We've obviously got a written report that we'll have for you. But during the meeting, and our intention is to get that out in the Thursday packet before next meeting. The question is, what kind of discussion do we want to have? We're not really taking a vote to accept the report. We're just kind of presenting the report. So the question is, what kind of discussion, if any, do you guys want to have that night, or do you want to digest for a meeting, or what do you... Is there a consensus about what we're thinking? Do you just want to ask questions about the report?
Will there be new information?
Nothing new, just the final version of the report. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing you haven't heard. I mean, you've heard the outline of what the recommendations will be just now. It's just a matter of looking at the report and if you've been generating, talking about any questions or concerns
I'm wondering... for some board members, we've sort of been in and out of the conversation,
mm-hmm.
and while we have had the opportunity, you know, while we can attend the meetings, you know, finance meeting as board members, and be honest with you, and we've had some, you know, more, we've had meetings that were, you know, purposeful so that we could all be in attendance,
mm-hmm.
And this recommendation is really, it's not, I'd say it's not a board recommendation, it's a finance committee recommendation.
Right.
I think it would be helpful for the board members who are not on finance, and as well as the community, to kind of go through a historical approach of how we came to this place. I mean, obviously very generally, in terms of, you know, we had these, you know, because
it's in the report, I think.
I understand, I know it's in the report, but presenting it that way, because one of the things that was of discussion when it was, you know, brought to make it into the Finance Committee was that we wanted to, whatever decision that was made by this board, be able to stand in public and say, we've looked at all the options, and that we have vetted each and every possible thing that could happen. And I think that this is an opportunity for the Finance Committee, since you'll be presenting, to say that you as the Finance Committee, because really it was the Finance Committee who vetted these things. Again, while the board, we threw our input in, it was the two of you. So I think it would be helpful to be able to present that historical piece. Again, it doesn't have to be a lengthy piece of it, but just to be able to say, we started here, we got to here, we got to here, and you know, kind of, it really would help explain why you are coming up with this recommendation versus here it is, this thing is best.
Yeah, I think that there's a responsibility to the group that attended the master facility, so we ought to just somehow recap briefly, it's in the report, but just briefly the options, why options were taken out. And then of the three that are left, let's discuss the pros and cons, and then the costs associated with them. And then I think we owe the community next steps.
John, do you think we can do that at the next meeting? I mean, I'm...
Well, it's up to the Finance Committee to say when they have that.
Our recommendation of what the next step should be, we're not giving anyone a timeline of those. We're just giving you our recommendations for what the board should consider next.
We do have short-term and long-term recommendations,
right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's not associated with a timeline to that.
Mm-hmm. No, and I wasn't looking for a timeline. I was looking for what's our next step, mm-hmm. right? Because everyone, you want to go back to the 1900s. We had this group, that group,
right?
Then now we had master facilities plan. Then we sent it to Finance Committee. Just what's our next step? Not a timeline, but just what are we going to do now so that people know where this thing's going.
Yeah, I wonder if I don't know if it's possible to extend an invitation to maybe some of those people. Because remember when they made their options, they said they were not allowed to consider costs or something. So maybe some of those people would be eager to see.
Well, we did consider costs. And they're
just the building costs.
Very much like...
No, I meant the original master.
The MFP committee.
The MFP.
Master.
Yeah. That was one thing they had expressed, so
there was really visioning and thinking 21st century. Mm-hmm. That was their charge.
So maybe, you know, but they get notified, hey, here's where mm-hmm. we're at. You know, if you're interested, you want to see.
I And you know, when I'm saying timeline or, you know, kind of just giving a historical perspective of this, I think I'm just suggesting, not that you have to say every single option, you know, under the sun, because that could take, you know, years. But the main, I mean, we had these series, and what did these series include? Not to the such of the detail, but I just think if, you know, it was sent to finance for a reason, and I think it's finance's duty and responsibility to explain.
So to give the context.
Yeah, give the context of it. Because I'm sure we're all, you know, we're going to look at this, and you're right, John. I mean, we're going to, okay, well, what are next steps? And I think, like anything we do as a board, we have a meeting, we present an information, we might have a little discussion. We don't really take action. We let it absorb. And, I mean, I don't, you know, I can take some materials home and kind of get a general idea, but I'd like to hear the thoughts that went behind what, you know, what this is, because I'm
so is it just I'm as already, an example, I'm not saying this is relevant or not, but as an example, if half of the recommendations were thrown out because they didn't eliminate portables, and that was the objective, then we need to say...
We need to say that.
Just say that,
yep.
Just at a high level, right? It's not, you don't need to go through every single one, but here's why we discounted...
Which it will be in the report.
Correct.
It's obvious.
Which
it's
needs
in
to be
report.
Part of the presentation so people can hear it. Understand,
Okay. So then it sounds like what, rather than discussion, I just want to put a context and so a time frame around this a little bit, that all that you've talked about to me would be, that's a very large presentation, discussion, debate, whatever it might be, is not a regular board meeting, that would be a special board meeting. So perhaps the best thing to do on the 21st is for there just to be a presentation of the work of the Finance Committee and where they are right now, questions raised if there are questions that may want to be, but not a discussion about, okay, now what? Does that make sense? Because I really do think if you're going to go into that next level of conversation, you ought to have just time devoted to that because it's a lengthy conversation.
Yeah, that would be the first next step. First next step will be a special board meeting to discuss it, right?
Okay. So just a presentation.
Yeah.
So you and I can talk.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Okay.
Just to clarify, what I'm hearing is that there's going to be an actual presentation similar to what you and Bob were doing, with a presentation with visuals and...
Well, you know, I don't know how many visuals you actually need, but we can talk about what work you need us to do to put that together for you.
Okay.
No. Bring your laser pointer.
Bring your clicker.
Yeah, we're going to be at Lincoln, too, right? So
yeah.
Just keep in mind, so it's a double presentation night.
Yeah. That's
bring the popcorn.
I would be concerned about that because you're going to have others in the audience, that to have two, and Lincoln is historically known for its lengthier presentations, so I'd want to keep that in as part of the
collection. So,
are we done
with that part of it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a board report? We're done with Bob's board report. If you have one, you can
I have
one.
A question on Bob's board report.
Go ahead, John.
I just want to get a sense for the Spalding site.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned that one is still in.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea here is this is a Spalding site, not using the village.
Well, when
using the park district property.
When FGM made their test fits, yeah, they didn't count on the park district property for when they did their test fits. Although you'll see one option there, one of the D options, I think it's a D2. If you keep flipping, you'll find one where they showed some playgrounds on that property. But only playgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's an existing playground that is there, I think.
Well, but they made it bigger. They basically took the orange boxes, you can see that's the one John's holding there, and moved them
turned up.
Yeah, they moved it from here.
They kept it in red. Right. So.
Okay. And then this is a 4-section school?
Yes.
That's per grade, yeah.
Yeah. 2-story.
And do we know that this eliminates affordables?
Yes.
Well, no, not a Hadley.
Not a Hadley.
But it eliminated all the other affordables.
Well, maybe not on its own. I don't know if that's, I mean,
that's something we have to
you know.
If it can house a four-section school, it should be able to eliminate the portables unless your boundary configurations
yeah.
were so unusual that you wouldn't allow that boundary configuration to occur.
It has enough.
I think we need to be able to answer that question.
Yeah, yeah.
There's enough space.
It has enough space to.
Yeah.
At that point, it's a question of getting the kids.
And it's a two-level school, not a three-level school.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There is a three-story footprint in there. There's on one of the options that you can see in there that was, you know, that is not what FGM is and the administration was recommending.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're architects. Given X amount of space and how many students you want, they're going to come up with something, and that's what we have.
Yeah, I just wanted to have the context of when I look at the drawings. All right.
Okay, that's all for board reports. Next up, we have three discussion items. First up are the 2011-12 student fees.
These fees are annual fees that we, from time to time, look at and alter. We have not done so for this year. I think these fees have been in place for the last 2 years, and we're recommending that we keep them at the same level that they were in previous years.
Just, I forgot the answer, but from last year, but the basic fees, I just back of the envelope calculation, about $300,000.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's what that is. And then these activity fees, the activities the students pay those are the ones where we give the teachers the extra stipends.
Mm-hmm.
I've never liked them. I wish we could get rid of them, but fine.
That's kind of, yeah, that's the same discussion every year.
Every year. I mean,
is it free public school or isn't it? Is the question, right? But.
We waive the fee. I mean.
Yeah, we waive the fee if you
waive
can't.
We waive the fee if it's a poverty.
Right,
I mean,
right. But, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, yeah, you pay so much for education and then it's like.
Well, but some things like, okay, you buy your gym uniform, you lose it. You know, at some point, if you just provided it every time they lost it, would you have to then, you know, provide
that's
another
right.
one? I mean, some of the things
that's not what the fee is. You got to buy the gym uniform. I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
fee,
but these fees are.
Nobody's. I don't believe they're certainly not excessive. They're mine. That's not the issue. I think it's just that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we're not in a position
to
get rid of revenue
sources.
Well,
I think we should make sure we state that when we do our board highlights is that for the third year we're keeping the fees the same. I mean, that's the kind of thing I think it's important for the community to know that we recognize that these are additional costs, but we're able to maintain them.
Hopefully the driver's age hasn't been lowered to 13. Okay. Next up, we have the. So, any more discussion on student fees? I guess again. Request for proposal for electric services.
This is an item that we brought to finance this evening as well, and we, as I indicated to you in my board letter, that we're expediting this process just a little bit so that the we can lock in the rates. The rates will not be locked in until we have board approval for them. This is a bid process that we also underwent last year, and the bids have come in lower for this year, and so the Bob, we're saving about a rate of what did you say?
0.012
over last year, so significant savings. And Bob is recommending that we have a little bit longer contract than just a 1 year contract with this to lock in those rates.
Who's our current vendor?
The
IEC Illinois Energy Consortium.
The highest one.
They are now the highest.
And did Integ.
Integris?
Integris.
Integris.
Did they quote last year?
Yes, they did.
Any other questions?
No, it doesn't get more commodity.
Yeah, it's a commodity. Yeah. You know, IEC may have locked in a couple of years and then, you know, out last year thinking they hit the low, and they didn't. And, you know, Integris maybe had their bids coming up again, and we can lock in now lower because they're getting it lower.
So we will bring this back next meeting for action.
Okay, and then last discussion will be acceptable uses of accumulated fund balances. And this is our last discussion item, which I think, you know, I guess if we want to kind of self-contain this at about a half hour discussion, I don't know if we'll come to board agreement and total agreement about things, but...
Well, I have a suggestion that might at least get this conversation started. The topic as we've got it right now is acceptable use of accumulated fund balance, and that may be the topic, or the topic may be what is the percentage of fund balance you wish, you think is appropriate to have. But I'd like to suggest that if, in the interest of time, but also in the interest of everyone having an opportunity to get their idea on the table, perhaps each board member could just talk a little bit about his or her perception of this topic, and after everyone has spoken, determine whether or not there's agreement or whether or not there's a topic worth pursuing here for further discussion.
Okay. And we got some information a few meetings ago related to some peer districts, fund balances, percentage-wise, and others.
And then you saw this evening in our long-range financial plan what predictably will happen to accumulation of fund balances after this year.
Right. Okay, did anyone want to start it off?
All right, who had the information on local, or are you sharing that later?
Oh, no, we gave it to you last time, but Bob has new copies of it.
Are these new and new improved?
No, they're the same.
But they're based off of the fiscal last June
30th, 2010 comprehensive annual financial report for each district.
So if you actually went to the school, the Illinois State report card, the financial info would actually be 2 years older than that.
That's correct.
What?
No, I had some thoughts in the email and I can't find it. Oh. There's no way I'm going to pull it out of here.
Oh, come on.
Command.
You can do it.
Well, I guess I was the one that asked to get this on the agenda so I could start. And kind of, you know, the levy discussion, you know, that John's idea there was kind of what spurred it. But over the last few years I've been on the board, we always kind of hit and run on this topic. We mention it, but then we never really talk about it. We talk about crafting a policy around fund balances, but we haven't done it. So I guess before we do that, I felt that the whole board should have a discussion on it. And, you know, I think the original question in the policy was what kind of percentage, you know, do we want to put on fund balances? But there's also been discussion over the last couple of years, or at least comments here and there about, you know, well, should you use fund balances in anticipation of, you know, lean years, you know, not just rainy day funds for, you know, when the roofs collapse, but rainy day funds in the sense that we don't get state funding or CPI drops to a historic low of 0.1 or something crazy like that. And then also there's the question of should we use it for long-term, you know, roof replacements or large capital, you know, capital-intensive projects like that. And those are kind of the ideas about what you can use them for. So I thought before we get into a discussion about, well, what's the right percentage to have, we ought to have concurrence on what's the right use for it. As of right now, kind of the unwritten, well, maybe it's even written policy is that they're really a rainy day fund and used so that we don't have to issue tax anticipation warrants. We don't really have any policy around saving up to pay for structural deficits for a year or two or something like that, and we don't really have a policy around
saving up money to pay for a $3 million roof replacement in 2 years. You know, we don't really have that policy of banking money. So I guess the first question is, what do we think is accepted? Is that the policy we want to maintain, this idea of it's really only for emergencies or not issuing tax anticipation warrants, or do we want to change that thinking and go with, other accepted uses, if you will, of those fund balances? So I guess this is more of a, I'm just throwing ideas out there. I'm not getting behind the idea of it, but those are the things that I can that are obvious to me anyway, and that is large capital expenditures or a large, precipitous drop of maybe a year or two in revenue stream that you can make up with your fund balances. I don't know if anyone else has other ideas about possible uses for the fund balances.
For me, I think that they can be used for all those things. It's a setting sort of a priority of, maybe capital projects would be the first thing you want to use it for, and maybe funding part of a tax levy, the last thing you want to use it for. But it's agreeing to what that list is and then trying to put it in some sort of buckets of priority.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if the intent of the discussion is to get to, here's a percentage we'd like to manage around, like we pick 25% or 30 or whatever number you want, we decide on. In order to pick that number, I think we have to include or exclude different uses. I mean, you can make a priority, but it's either an accepted use or it isn't, I guess, as a matter of policy.
But if it's not an acceptable use, does that just mean that the board in an emergency would say, we've said in the past we would not do this. The situation is such now that it warrants this emergency situation.
I guess a board can always change its policy, right, and make a decision to spend those monies on, what they deem necessary at the time. But I guess what I'm trying to get to is, what's our management point, around those fund balances? And in order to determine what that management point should be, you need to come up with you need to have some idea of, well, what could you use it for? And if we go forward with the idea that it's only for, to keep cash in the bank in June, before we get our tax money, that first installment, well, then we only need so much. We could plot that out and figure out, okay, we only need X dollars. And then you can move on to the further discussion of, okay, what happens if you've got more than that in the fund balances? But a future board, if that was our policy, a future board could in 2 years say, well, geez, we really need to replace the roofs, let's dip into our reserve funds to do it, provided they amend their policy. But I'm trying to get a basis for what we manage around. So I don't know if we're not, we can't put the handcuffs on the future board. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, how do we determine that percentage that we want to manage around? What's our assumptions that we plug, just like the PMA presentations? What's the assumptions we're plugging in to the fund balance model? I think that's what I'm trying to decide.
Yeah, something along that lines, it'd be helpful to understand, so if we project total loss of state funding or federal funding, we could figure out what those numbers were. That's right now, under some multiple of our fund balance. So I'm trying to, I don't know what those other big unexpected expenditures would be. Because I'm thinking, if you have something burnt down, you have insurance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I guess it would be helpful for me to understand where the other...
That's not the only risk. I mean, we've got other risk instruments to combat risk. So what are the other uses? Well, to your point, I guess that's the point. What else could we possibly use fund balances for under our current policy right now? I mean, is there anything... As Dan says, we've got insurance. Are there any other risks that we would see other than the loss of revenue stream?
Well, I was going to say, I think that for me is, I think for all of us, that's what's really staring us in the face. And to Bob's point earlier about knowing for our, did you say for categoricals, right? That we'll get the one payment, but we don't know beyond that, and nobody's saying. And I read in the paper today that they're looking to repeal the property tax increase down in Springfield. So, I mean, that could have an impact as well. So, I guess the way I was thinking about this.
What is a repeal of the property tax?
Not the property tax, but the sales tax increase, income tax, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Income tax increase that Governor Quinn.
It's already come out of our paychecks. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll give it back to you.
Just change the calculation of the way you found your return.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right. sorry, I misspoke. So I get my point is that the moving target that this creates, and I think I was trying to think about this from as a kind of a basic level as possible, and I put it in terms of when I look at my own house and that kind of expectation that most of us have, you know, read about, heard about, especially when you go through job changes, that you should have X number of months in the bank in order to cover expenses. I don't know a single person in my life that has done that effectively, but it's certainly something that we talk about. And that was part of my question when I asked about the PMA projections and wanted to make sure I was reading this correctly. So, you know, we have X number of months available as we go into deficit spending in terms of our expenses. So if something catastrophic were to happen in terms of state funding where they said, you know what, so one of the parties says, we are not paying anything out until this budget balances, you're on your own.
I don't think that.
Yeah. These numbers don't represent
Bob's that. Calculation was no revenue.
Right,
at all.
Bob was. Right. But I'm saying my question was this fund balance is a number of months of expenditures that one we would have available.
No, it's well.
But there's
it's
a difference between a structural deficit
right.
being maintained it, versus no revenue at all.
Right, but say that again.
Well, there's a difference between saying I've got a structural deficit that says I'm losing, you know, $250,000 every year to saying, you know what, you're not getting any revenue at all for 3 years and, mm-hmm. you know, you can only fund operations for another 3 months given the reserves you have.
So under your scenario, I would lose maybe federal and state money, but if I still collected property taxes, those numbers don't, that doesn't represent that.
This doesn't represent the property tax.
Well, no. This represents zero. You don't get property, state, federal, nothing, right?
Okay. Yeah, and we'll always have our property tax amount. But what I'm...
Well, or you can assume that maybe you have 75% of your... I mean, you'd have to put something in there to make this a number
right.
that would be more
so
meaningful
you're
to
making
a real
my argument. So you're making my argument, which is... Or not argument, but my thought about this, which is right. that our fund balance is a percentage of what we are already committed to in terms of having those funds available. And when we talk about making a list, I don't disagree that dollars could come out of here. I went back, I remember in 2007 that District 89's board had a conversation about spending reserves for education programs. And they agreed to do that. And I also remember Lori Gaspar, who was board president at the time, saying in 3 years, the way this was projected out, we're going to have to go to the voters and ask for money to continue to support these. So, the upside is, and a couple of their board members said, you know, we have the dollars. It's not appropriate in their mind to go to the taxpayers and ask for these dollars if we have them here. And that's a little bit of our conversation. The reality check was Lori Gaspar saying, and in 3 years we're going to have to go to the taxpayers anyway. So I'm putting that on the table as a part of our conversation because I think whatever percentage we fall on, that there is the reality that we need community consent and support to continue to fund what we might pull out of fund balance to put into these programs or whatever it is, or
in certain situations, right? So if we
whatever
if we
want
to, if we were going to build a new school and we had it in our fund balance, I would suggest that we probably go to the community and ask them if that's the right thing to do, or you know, get mm-hmm. their buying into that as opposed mm-hmm. to spending, you know, $40 million or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But in other situations, if it fits filling a hole, structurally for a year, just like this $300,000 a year we're going to have to maintain the quality of education, that may not require going to the public. Mm-hmm. When I say going to the public, meaning referendum. Mm-hmm. It would certainly warrant a conversation and transparency.
Right, and in my thinking about this and going back kind of historically, locally, when folks have had, boards have had conversations around this, there is that reality check of, we can do this for X number of years, one, two, three, whatever it is, but then there is that kind of, we're setting ourselves up to have that conversation. And so I just want that to be the kind of yin and yang of this, because we know we're going to have to do that eventually.
Or are you preparing, buying yourself time to fix the structural problem?
Drew, did you have thoughts?
You know, I'm thinking about the roof situation, and I'm thinking that it would make sense to put some sort of accrual account into the budget for future expenditures relative to the roofs.
In addition to your fund balance, or as a portion of your fund balance?
Either or. I mean, depending on what.
I guess, or you just account for it. You know, it's really, this is all about our individual board policy. I mean, if you made a roof fund, right, and that would be something we accounted for internally, your numbers would skew then on the ISBE ratings. But, you know, it's something that we would keep track of and at least know those dollars, they're not excess dollars,
right.
They're dedicated for this roof that we know has to be replaced within the next 3 to 5 years. And, I mean, I just remember looking at our long-term plans, that's obviously the big ones hanging out there, and so large that they're not going to fit into the five-year plan that we saw tonight. You know, that would wipe us out of any other capital improvements for a number of years. So there is something hanging out there, and I mean, it's obviously the question for us is that a legitimate use?
So for me, the way I view this fund balance is it's the taxpayers' money. And since I've been here since 2005, that fund balance has always grown. And I like the idea of being able to use it. I would love the idea of being able to use it in this last levy to provide some relief for people that are hurting based on, you know, the economy. I understand, Bob, where you're trying to go and proper uses or not, but I still think we need to get to a percentage where we're comfortable to start the discussion or, you know, mandate by policy, whatever the discussion, to say, okay, do we have proper use for this money or not? And we may decide we don't, but at least to force the discussion to see how we can use the money to handle a structural deficit, to either buy us more time to correct it, or to give us the time to go to the community so they understand it, because we're going to have a conversation with them. That would be, for me, a legitimate use of it. And, you know, to me, you know, we heard the PMA guy say, I think after 30% was 30% was a, no, they said 30% was
a threshold
where, you know, where they like to see districts. You know, I look at some of these districts here, I hope to God the math's wrong, you know, where they have 68%, 56%, 92%. That seems extremely excessive, and if I were in those districts, I probably wouldn't be happy.
But there's a lot of variables here. I mean, you also look at what they're spending per pupil. I mean, you could save money by implementing austerity measures every year.
Right.
You know, you could have a structural deficit because you have more programs than another district.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's so hard to...
Right. You could have declining enrollment versus static enrollment versus,
So, you know, so I still think we need to get to some sort of percentage. You know, if we want to look at how many months do I have money, I think if you say we lost state aid, federal aid, and, you know, 25% of the people in Glen Ellen foreclosed and couldn't pay their taxes, so we only get 75%, you know, you're probably looking, I don't know, we probably have at least a couple of years worth of money to fund that.
Mm-mm. Yeah, but
no. I think that's where the expertise lies. I think the other layer to this, and I think is important to have in the conversation, is we have a 20,000 foot view of this. We see this every other, you know, twice a month, and get these updates. Certainly finance is touching it much more often than the rest of us. But you live and work with these dollars every single day and know, again, staffing changes. We have an increase in early childhood, or that's not a good one to use. We have an increase in a grade level. We need another bilingual teacher. I mean, all those pieces that influence and impact what we might consider an appropriate percentage, you might think that's too low, or you might say it's too high. But I think part of the informing of this conversation is to have that heard, because you're working with it day to day.
I think that's what we need to know. Is my question I wrote down is, what are the other ways to lose revenue? I can see losing federal, see losing state property taxes. Even if they foreclose, the bank or somebody's still got to pay it. Maybe if there's a drop in EAV, I've heard that thrown out there. But still then, maybe not. So I guess that's what I want to understand. Before I get to a percentage, I want to understand what are these losses, you know, what could they lose? Then we can see this projection of how much time they're going to give us. And then the other thing, you know, once we get that, we had one of the things I kind of brought up during our tax levy discussion was, I want to see the line item that says this amount of money is needed to maintain the fund balance. You know, we want 25%. Okay, here's for, you know, all the other categories. Here's the dollar amount we need to keep it at the 25, 30, whatever number it is. This is why we need this much.
But it would go, that to me would be a plus or a minus. So if the number's at 27, here's the amount of money that goes in to make it 25.
Right.
Or if it were 20, here's the amount of money we need to levy to get it to
25. Right, exactly.
Well, out of the revenues you're taking, I mean, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that out of every levy, what percentage would we be designating to fund balance?
Well, I guess the way it works right now is, by default, surpluses go towards
fund balance.
The fund mm-hmm. balance. And so I'm looking for that dollar amount, you know, so then you can either look at funding a capital program or putting money back in, or, you know, maybe you find you meet all your numbers and you don't have to levy the banks.
As you saw our projections, the actual amount that might be left over at the end of a budget year is diminishing significantly. So I'm wondering, as a point of clarification, would you be suggesting that you reduce somewhere else in order to build your reserve because you want to get to a certain percentage, or?
And that's kind of that ties into the structural deficit piece.
Well, that would be the opposite.
At that point, it's not yet a deficit, but if you're under your percentage, do you need to
build it up?
Build a surplus into the budget.
Right.
Is a question. Yeah. But
and that's going to come out of our policy for whatever number.
Right, and I kind of feel like the logical progression I had here was, before we get to the, and I'm with you, John, we need a management number. I think either it's a percentage or how many months or whatever. That's the management target. And then the discussions about what do you do if you're over or under, right? That's kind of
the
I kind of saw that as the third discussion.
Yeah, that's the business judgment.
I just want to make sure we're all on the same page in the genesis, you know, that we're all on the same page on our assumptions for how do we get to that management tool.
I just want to make one comment, and that is the fund balance reserve conversation to me, while connected to levy, levy has ramifications when we're talking about what you just said, Dan, which is if a board makes a decision to not levy what's available to us, that impacts
every other board beyond us. And I know that that's a conversation that we've had, and that's all we get put out there, and it's not always well accepted, but that's the reality of the way the state sets up our system with December, spring, et cetera. And so we don't have those numbers necessarily. We don't know them as concretely, if I'm thinking about this correctly. So I just want to put that on the table as a piece around the levy conversation, because that's unique to that role that we have in terms of taking recommendation and then voting on that. That has that impacts from that point and then further on. So that's always that's a reality check.
Yeah, I guess, you know, even the percentage number is like, you know, I'm trying to think through, a percentage may not be the way to look at it either, because our budget just may keep going up, right? It's really, it's a question of, if I lose all my federal and state aid, that's what, $3 million? That's for $3 million. So with the kind of money I have now, if I lost that, I could go 3 years without any state or federal aid based on, you know, high-level math here. Now, if we say, okay, so, you know, that would mean 8%, right? Mm-hmm. But then if we said, look, we're not going to get some property tax dollars, you know, we assume 10% of that, maybe that doesn't come in. I mean, I don't know if that's, it's got to be a realistic scenario that could happen to us to then say, okay, we need this amount of money in the bank. So it could be state and federal, that could be realistic. It could be we want to save for a rainy day for a capital project of under $5 million, let's say, right? So you would add the $3 million, you'd add the $5 million, you kind of get to a number that says, as a district, knowing that some of our risks are insured, so we wouldn't have to worry about it, I feel, you know, maybe $10 million is a good number, and I'm making all this up, I'm not suggesting that's what it is, but the $10 million is a good, safe number, and that's really what we should work towards. And as our business changes and risk changes, that number may go up or down, and we can look at it as a percentage, but it's really knowing that I've got the money to cover the bills and for a certain amount of period that we feel comfortable with based on a realistic scenario we're looking at.
And financial health, like in terms of bond rating, with that, so that if you are interested in going out for bonds, that you can get the lowest rate on that bond, is that something in like that you would be thinking of too as a criteria, or is that something separate?
I would certainly entertain understanding what the impact of that is, yeah.
Pretty significant. I know you've talked about that before, Phyllis. It's pretty significant.
There's different variables that were, you know, the financial report card and things like that that are taken into consideration. Our fund balance health, when we're here on the phone with Moody's getting a rating, is, you know, that's
right,
a component.
Thanks. It's a component.
That's a piece of it.
So may looking at all those components to see which ones are valid.
Yeah, and to say, so where does that number take us? We might say we don't have enough. You know, I mean, that could be the situation. But
John, are you talking about backing into the numbers? Mm-hmm. It sounds like we're going through the different mm-hmm. component pieces mm-hmm. and backing into a number. But
yeah, I just started thinking that coming up with a percentage, especially when you look at how all over the board all these districts are, may not be the right way to do it. It'd be how much money do I need to keep my car payment for a year, my gas, my electric, my phone, my mortgage. Okay, what does that add up to? Here's the amount of money it is. And then as you understand the risks of what's happening in your business over, you know, every year, you look at that and you say, is there a new risk that maybe I should bank a little more that could be happening, a trend that's happening or something like that.
And even that depends on how big your family is, what kind of car you drive, what your house is like, what neighborhood you live in.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just the variable in that mm-hmm. just looking at the percentage, I don't think it can tell you. And I don't know if we're getting more off the topic of what to spend the money on versus...
Well, it ties into it.
Yeah.
It's, well, we're trying to back into a number or a percentage or whatever it comes out to be, so... What's the terms of the equation that we're plugging in here? That's
well, I think about special education increasing, our bilingual population, we know just by the numbers in DuPage County, and our own school district, that's gone up. So there's these, which is why I think I'm
this is a really important conversation because I think one of the things that is critical about it is that our community knows that we're having deep discussion around really important topics to them, which is how their dollars are spent and whether their dollars fit or not. The other piece to me, though, is that it becomes clearer and clearer as we talk about this that we don't have the day-to-day life with this like our Ann's team does. So I'm wondering if there's another step to this to move us to that, to help guide this conversation more in the direction it needs to go. Versus not, you know, to your point, I'm using high-level numbers. Does this make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's a risk conversation. What are the risks that could occur to this business? And based on that, you know, what do we feel we need to put away?
Well, it sounds like it's a risks conversation as well as a... It's more... because if you do only risks, and I think Dan has tried to illuminate that the risks are relatively low in the school district, that if it's only risks, that would be a factor for you accumulating, keeping a fund balance. You might be willing to underfund that balance because the property taxes are relatively
stable.
But
it also sounds like you were talking about what might we want to use those balances for in terms of one-time expenditures or even, sure, in your case, structural deficits.
Yeah, I view that as a risk. Project could be
implement more enlightenment in elementary schools full time and
motion
structural. Yeah, but you can't reduce the levy at the same time say I want to do this and then say
well, and if you take that as a risk conversation, just as the roofing conversation, you know, the sky's the limit in terms of those risks. So then you have to you probably have to build a criteria.
That's why
a matrix or a rubric.
I mean, I'm guessing that's why I'm picturing that. That's why the roof thing jumps out at me, because it's something you can actually put your fingers on, and Bob already has. We have a schedule of when we think these roofs are, you know, our roofs are going to be need to be replaced. So we can put a pretty good, you know, dollar number around that fund if we wanted to create that fund. I don't know if we have consensus to do that, but that's the one obvious thing. Mm-hmm. The idea, you know, the question of would you want to add foreign language or special ed increases and things like that, I guess that hits your bottom line, that hits your budget every year over year.
Yeah, you're
and I guess if we do have some kind of percentage component to it, you're going to then manage around that increasing expenditure line, right? If that expenditure line goes up because of increasing bilingual or special ed needs of any kind, then your reserve fund is gonna match that, whether it's in the terms of 3 months, you know, cash on hand, or you know, some kind of. However you look at that, there's going to be some component tied to our expenditure line.
So, would you like the administration to put together a list of risks, list of concepts or ideas by which fund balances might be used, or reasons for having fund balances that you can then react to?
Yeah, I guess I'm not hearing that many ideas I haven't heard before.
Right.
So if there's anything out there that other districts are doing, you know, I think we should entertain those. And then I guess I'd like to hear the risks of property tax. We can look at the back of the CAFR. The risk around property taxes is nil.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically 99% to 101% every year, even the last couple of years. I mean, if people lose their home, someone's picking up the tax, you know, the tax bill on them, either the bank or people buying the tax bill. I forget what that's called. What's that called? That's a technical term for it.
What's it called?
Tax bill. Yeah, there you go. I mean, someone's paying the taxes, right? So the risk around property taxes is nil. Obviously, federal and state, you know,
then it's just a question of 100%, 50%, 75%. You know, we can put easy numbers around those, which we've done.
And we do. We'll continue to do annually just in terms of our budget development.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess then the conversation becomes, as that unfolds, do you, when you have that conversation, rather than reducing personnel or reducing expenditures, are you willing to take those, that loss of money out of your fund balance, which is a structural deficit to mm-hmm. fund operations? Regardless of what the topic is regardless of what the particular item is, that's a huge decision to make, to have a structural deficit.
I guess in listening to this discussion, I'm still trying to get an understanding of what are we trying to accomplish, and what is the ultimate goal with this. I guess, and if I'm wrong, please let me know, but I don't believe we've ever used our fund balance money. I've always looked at fund balance as that savings account. If the roof, if a program, you know, we say it doesn't get funded one year, we're going to take a look at it. Reality is we take a look at it and we decide it's pretty important to us, so now we're going to budget for it. We don't take it out of our fund balance. We don't operate that way. Mm-hmm. In my years here, I don't believe we've ever had a deficit. We do not operate that way. We've made a very strong stand to our community, to ourselves. That's not the way we do business. And if something gets cut, it gets cut, but we don't spend what we don't have. But this discussion of we have this surplus and, you know, coming up with a percentage, I'm trying to understand what are we trying to accomplish with it? Are we trying to say, well, and I tend to agree with John from this perspective of it grows every year. You know, we always ask for the maximum. But for me, that's kind of two separate discussions, because the levy discussion is about, for me, preserving that levy so that while we may not need it per se, we're preserving that number, that percentage for the future, for some other board and for some other kids, that we have it there. And right or wrong, I guess that's just the way that I've looked at it. I think when we've had that discussion about that number and that levy, it's always been, well, that board, how many years ago, didn't do X, Y, and Z, and this is why we're here today. So we have this surplus year after year. Some years it's a little bit more than others, and sometimes I look at it and think, well, actually, that's probably a good thing. That means that we made cuts within our budget, or we did things in a more efficient way, that we did not need to use the money that was budgeted, and thus we have, you know, a surplus which is going into our fund balance. The reality is, like John said, we don't use the money. We've never had one of these situations. Am I correct? Have we ever used the? Okay. Just so I'm not speaking out of term. But so we have this money, and so what do we do with it now? And I agree, we should be looking at, okay, if we reach a certain point, we don't need that much in savings. So what should we be doing with it? And I feel like when we talk about it from the standpoint of the levy discussion, John, is that you're saying if we get to point X, we should be levying less the next year, figuring that percentage of money back into our budget so we can ask for less money.
That's one way, but that's not this discussion. The purpose is what you just described, which is
the savings.
At what point do we have enough savings?
Okay, but I'm just from listening to this discussion, the genesis of this discussion this time around came out of the levy discussion.
But it's come up before.
I'm not saying it hasn't, right. John. I'm just saying at this time, that's the genesis of this discussion and how we got here. But I feel like we're talking about it in ways we're backing into a number. What's the point? What is it that we're trying to do?
What if the administration makes a recommendation to you?
We don't have anything, because I feel like you have talked around this subject a lot,
and it's still very difficult to get at what your interest is. So if we were to just say, okay, react to this,
mm-hmm.
And we'll just, whatever this is, I mean, I'm not even sure, but I'll give you something to react to.
Right, and I that was my point about your hands-on and notice day-to-day and have not only intuitive knowledge, but also implicit knowledge about this, because it's what you do every day. It's not what we do. I think part of the impetus of this is wanting to say to the community, you see this big savings account, and we don't want to have it sitting here. And I'm not necessarily comfortable with that. I think we're stewards of dollars. If I were a community member not serving on this board, and we had a reserve of X number of dollars, where it is right now, 11 million or whatever, and then 2 years down the road, we got hit with another CPI like we did last year, right? And we had some problems in our buildings, and then I had used this money for something else, then I would say, you're not holding up your fiduciary responsibility. Part of the reserve is, and that's frustrating because it is a rainy day, but we don't necessarily know what's going to happen. And so my desire, and without doing 18 hours of work on this, Erica's opinion, is to just have a sense of how you keep in mind what makes sense. When does your siren go off when you look at the budget where you say, I'm concerned about this because this is tracking in this direction? And so, keeping us on track in terms of a district, which you have done.
Erica, I agree about 18 hours of work, and I don't want them to, I'm looking at this and saying, you're going to bring us a bunch of stuff, but you should know us all better than that. We're going to turn around and say, this is not what we wanted. We have a tendency to do that. And I hate to see your staff, you and your staff, come and with to us and pull something together for us to react to. Because it's not even back of the envelope. What do you guys want? I mean, I feel like you're not answering the question. What is it that you're looking for?
And we've already gone 45 minutes.
Yeah, we've gone. I don't think we've gotten that, and I don't know if we are. I mean, at this point, do we want to? I mean, we can continue this discussion with some more input from the administration, I think. I would let's see what Dan and our staff puts together. Maybe that'll help focus us.
I guess Drew keeps trying to jump in and answer my question.
I think, as I see it, how do we justify the reserve levels? And how can we justify to the community why we're maintaining the levels that we are? I think empirically, we can justify certain levels of reserves by risk-based analysis. That is, we need to maintain X amount of money for different issues. And I think there's a mathematical equation that can explain the $11 million, and $5 million is for this, and $3 million is for this, and $2 million for this, and you back into those numbers, that there's probably a very logical, very methodical thought process for that, and I think that's what I would like to see from the administration.
Okay. That makes sense, and that I can understand. That makes sense that that's what we're looking to justify.
To say it another way, up until a year ago, we would always say it's here for a rainy day. That was our answer. Now we could say, well, it's here for a rainy day, or if we don't get our state or federal funding. So let's back into something that says whether the number's right or wrong.
Okay, and I think that's a more concrete way to frame the discussion and what it is that we're looking for. I don't know. I mean, for me, that makes more sense.
I think I was there.
Bob, do you think you can put that together?
We'll start.
Do you have a timeline?
We got plenty of time for the next
meeting after next.
There you go.
March, the first meeting in March?
Yeah.
I think we've got...
I'd rather go to maybe the end of March. Yeah. We have a lot coming up.
Yeah, right. What's the timeline for you?
Yeah, you tell us.
Well, we've got staffing coming up. We have a lot of things right now that are on all of our plates with the renewal of the plan. I would prefer to probably push it a little bit to maybe April.
Okay.
I'm going to have to do work on the master's recommendation.
Well, and we have election coming up. I don't know if this will be a big topic of, you know, people talking about what it should be, what it shouldn't be. I mean, I think it's good to have some...
If we can pull it together sooner than that, we certainly will.
Okay.
Do so.
What?
There's a question at the legal end.
Well, that's fine. I mean, not to beleaguer this, but I think it comes down to the fact: do you think a district is just levying to build reserves? And I think it bears out we're, you know, not just finding programs to spend money on, where our operating expenses are well below the averages for our peers. So, all right, Ann, so we'll look forward to that. What?
Let's look forward to
that. All right, upcoming meetings. We have on February 21st a public hearing at 7:15, and then followed by a regular board meeting at Abraham Lincoln School. What is the public hearing for?
For waivers, renewal of our waivers. That's our public hearing for renewal of our waivers for holidays.
Okay. And we're still working on a calendar?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We had to cancel our meeting last week.
Okay.
There was one thing.
But can we say spring break is going to match the high school at least? I mean, is that
all of our major holidays? Yeah.
Okay. Because Glenbard's approved their calendar for next year, and I think people just want to make sure even, you know, ours is
We've always had major holidays match up.
Mm-hmm. Well.
So it's really some sick days and...
Yeah, in the past we have always had major holidays.
Okay. And, sorry.
Are you considering that month this year?
Well, I wouldn't
ask for a meeting, so. Well, we'll look forward to a report next meeting. Okay. Okay. And then we have a meeting on March 7th, a regular board meeting back here at Central Services. So, finally, are there any other matters to be considered by the board? All right. And, again, we have public participation at the end of the meeting. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? None. We do not have a need to adjourn to closed session, so may I have a motion to adjourn the board meeting?
Motion.
Second. Second, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you.